Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Strain. This is a podcast we're doing down here in Las Vegas. This is episode one, season one of the podcast from J.R. Strain Cannabis. We are in British Columbia, Canada. We're a licensed producer. They're growing and selling into the Canadian market. We have a brand across the country, and we're doing some export as well. But at the moment, we're down here in Las Vegas, Nevada, with some good friends of mine. These guys are the suppliers of our lighting that we use in our aeroponic facility in BC. So this is my friend Jeremy. This is my friend Mike. We are at their very gracious hosting of us down here in Las Vegas. First of all, thanks, guys, for bringing us down to Vegas, getting me out of Canada. This time of year kind of sucks right now, so this is great to be in Vegas, hanging out with my brothers, talking about weed, growing weed, smoking weed, and seeing what you guys are up to down here in good old LV.
Definitely. Yeah, always good to see you, man.
Fuck yeah, brother. Always good to see you, too.
So, let's jump into it. Jimmy, can you tell us a little bit, just kind of your origin story into cannabis, right? When was the first time you smoked? When did you decide to do this as a career? You know, give us the gist of your story.
Sure. Let's talk about the past, Jimmy. Rewind to 1987. In high school, Calgary, Winston Churchill High. Being a weed dealer, you know, selling weed, selling the pre-rolls to the friends, shit like that. And then one day I was like, look at this stack of paper I got to give to my dealer. And I get to keep this little stack. How do I keep that stack? Fucking grow it then, right? But the first time, we'll go back a little bit further. So first time I smoked weed, you asked me. I was in grade 9, playing baseball out in left field. Not right field, left field, right? Stuck in left field, staring at my shoes, waiting for a ball to come my way. And I looked down and I seen a vial sitting by my shoe. This vial of green oil, as it turned out. I didn't have a clue what it was. I was 14 years old. What the heck is this? Picked it up and was like, shit, that might be drugs. So, you know, put it in the pocket. And after that ball game, I phoned my friend Rich, who I figured would know what it was, and he did. It's like, oh yeah, bro, that's a weed oil. We got a hot knife that shit. So,
big bags of memories.
Right? So, you know, off to my house, I remember in the basement, my parents, we had a pool table in the basement. Nice green felt, picture it, right? We got a shiny new set of knives out of mom's kitchen drawer, right? Heat them babies up, and as soon as that blob of oil hit the knife, just right off her, you know. How it is, I'm sure. Just right off it, right on the pool table. Big stain of oil on the pool table. I'm like, oh.
Of course.
That's going to kill me. Either way, we then season the blades. You know how that goes. You got to season them up, rub some tobacco on there, whatever, so they don't slide off. And then that was the first time I tried a cannabis product. So it was probably just some gunky dirt green oil somebody made with some ISO.
Straight to dabbing in 1987.
Straight up.
Did you do it with a water bottle? Did you cut off half a water bottle, or did you just straight hot knife it and just
try not to burn the lips? And that was straight. And then the water bottle. Then we were doing wall tokes, you know, until we passed out. And we were 14, being dumb.
What's a wall toke?
You know, when you hold it, your friend presses on your gut. You hold it, and then when you blow it,
we don't have this in America.
That's
a whole different dynamic.
Are you sure that vial was cannabis and not heroin?
No. They're not sure. No, for sure it was green weed oil, without a doubt. So then, you know, we started, this is what we did for business. So that was lead up, grade 9, grade 10. I'm like, all right, why green vials? And we would skin up papers, right? Skin up zigzags with a smear of oil across, a little tobacco, skin it, a little skinny roll, and sell those for $1 a piece, right?
Yeah.
$1. But you could skin up 45 papers out of a 1 gram vial. It cost you $20. So right away, markup's over 100%, right? I'm like, this is good business. Like, sell things, sell themselves.
Yeah. So back then, I mean, Canada was kind of one of the first markets with legalizing, right?
Sure.
As far as the whole country goes. Yeah. What was the mood kind of back in the day in Canada, the acceptance of cannabis in general? No. Was it still kind of very stigmatized at that age? Was there harsh penalties?
Yep.
I know, I mean,
not harsh compared to you guys. Like,
we
don't mess with
it. We take everything up a little bit.
You know, half of Canada back in the day was damn near, you know, growing.
Well, BC, BC bud is pretty much famous. Now, this whole Pacific Northwest region is quite famous for, you know, inception of growers, like the Washington State, you know, and then into British Columbia, people who left the U.S., war defectors that didn't want to go to Vietnam or something, ended up in the interior of British Columbia, in a region called Nelson. A lot of history, a lot of growing, a lot of growers came out of BC. So the talent pool is there. It'd be whatever, maybe comparable to your Humboldt County guys down here or something, right?
I think I was watching a documentary back in the day. It said back then in BC, like one out of every 100 houses was a grow house.
Fuck, one out of four, probably.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe not back then in the
80s. But like one out of 100 said they were growing.
So let me, you know, provincial law. So I was in Calgary, Alberta, and without a doubt, it was illegal. You know, you get caught growing, you're going to jail.
Okay.
However, first time offense in Canada, blah, 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 2 years less a day. A non-violent offense, he'd serve 1/6. So 3 or 4 months. I had some guys that, you know, friends of mine that went down that path. Not me. I was
one of the lucky ones.
One of the lucky ones. Fuck, one of the fast ones. I had some chases, you know, the back door for sure, in the middle of a trim session while they're coming through the front, the battering ram. And, drop the scissors and run out the back. Fuck, that was a whole other story in itself. Big chase, Mike, dude. Pre-helicopter days, though, otherwise I never would have got away, right? But
there you go.
This was in the early 90s and in a warehouse. So anyway, it's kind of just a backfill a little bit. Yeah. Selling weed, high school, got to high school, went. I'm going to grow weed. And I remember my very first grow, it's actually... We got a clone off my dealer. This guy wouldn't give up a clone. He had this, and I remember it too. It was a really, you know, we called it houseplant. Mm. We didn't know. I know that they call that thing from the South guy.
Watch out. We're going to get a fucking houseplant. Steve was just on real quick. Not on his house.
I was first. But whatever. Finally got a clone off him. And I was living at home at the time. Like, I'm living with my parents and still living with my buddy. And we got this clone. Fired up behind his dresser with a little light, and we had it from the parents and furiously looked for a place to rent so we could start growing, right? So we're caring for this clone in mom and dad's. My buddy's parents were ultra religious too, so we're like, fuck, I hope Rita doesn't find that. So we got a place, and it's so funny. When we found this house, it was such a rundown, you know, it was a former biker house or something, because in the closet downstairs there was a secret door that went into another room.
Nice.
And I remember my landlord was like, I don't know why this is here, but whatever. We're like, I know why that's there. So we just wood paneling, let shit fake wood paneling,
yeah,
and throw that over the door in the basement.
Yeah.
And just basically the corner of the basement's gone now. People come down there like, we're in there. You go through the closet into your little secret grow. And of course, I mean, this is back, everybody needs to remember this. This is pre-internet. This is like no info available.
Yeah, high times, basically.
Yeah, high times.
There's a few articles in there that you can
read. A couple little grocers. I remember my grocers, strange people. And then I remember my guy, Raj, from Quick Grow. You go in there and, you know.
You're just like,
people, I'm busy. You take taxis to the grocery, right? Sure, like, you know, fucking showing up in your car and your plate and all that stuff. So ultra careful. You know, buy all your stuff from different places, and we made a drip bucket. My very first grow was a hydroponic drip bucket.
Okay.
So the Leca, you know, the Leca rock, the expanded clay pellets.
Yep.
Basket.
Yeah, Hydroton.
Hydroton, sure. Exactly. So we just got our clones in that, hung our light, you know, the old reflector, that just a flat, shitty reflector with a vertical, I think it was a metal halide, and then probably HPS. But, you know, just figure it out. Build some shit. See what happens. Oh, learn about humidity. Learn about this. And unfortunately, learn from mistakes, right? Or fortunately, hopefully we learn from mistakes. But there's a lot of that going down.
Nice. So that was the first grow. Kind of what did it look like?
My how first roll?
How long did it go for? What did it look like? Like, what did...
No, yeah, how do you water that stuff, Jim? I mean, here, that was pretty advanced for back in the day with the
drip. Is it called, like, a happy bucket? What did they call those?
Well, actually, no. We went to the ice cream store, and he gave us free pails. You know, like the big ice cream pails?
Yeah, they're like 4-gallon pails or something.
Yeah. Yeah. When they were white, of course, we had to spray paint them black, so the light didn't come through.
Sure.
And then you drill in your hole through your through-hole fitting in the bottom, and pop drip, and they just... The hoses connect back to your little reservoir, right in the
with
corner.
The ring, sure.
You know, just manually do it all. I don't really. I mean, that was a long time ago, but it was manual as shit. We didn't know much, dude. You know,
that's pretty high. I mean, that's way high tech.
Yeah, back in the day. My very first grow was hydro.
You're at Home Depot or whatever it is in Canada, getting all the grommets and the pieces. I've been there so many times.
Canadian Tire, bro.
Canadian Tire, really? You guys were at Canadian Tire?
Well, you know, I don't think we had Home Depot back then, though.
Damn, Canadian Tire.
There was no Walmarts, no shit. I love the Home Depot stories, though, dude. Oh, that's a whole other little tangent we'll go off on here, but going to Home Depot and you got this shopping cart filled with fucking, like, electrical shit, plumbing, like, wiring tubing, and 8 garden hoses and
something upside down.
And these fuckers are always so nosy. They're like, what are you building? What are you doing? And I'm like,
fish pond.
My go-to answer was always a time machine. I looked at them with a straight face and I'm building a time machine. And they go, haha, no, really, what are you building? A fucking time machine. No, I need some more of that tubing. It's one guy who's pissed me off. You know that? The ice maker tubing, the thin line, the water line? And I needed, you know, a lot. And he's like, well, most people only need like 10 or 12 feet of this. I go, I need 100 feet. Well, that's an awful lot. Are you sure? I go, you know, I'll make it 200. So I sent the guy to take the end and ran to on the end of the corridor, like to measure because they have it marked out on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, keep going. So that was the late 80s. And yeah, of course, illegal without a doubt. Alberta was more conservative. So the penalties would be harsher for sure than it was in British Columbia. Like, as you mentioned, you know, a lot more people are going, and then judges see it more often. They're like, ah, fuck it, not another grower. Okay, whatever.
Way less harsh than our penalties back in the
day. Oh, yeah, back when you were
saying murder, if you're growing one plant, fucking
Texas. That's right.
A seed in Las Vegas was a felony for forever.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy.
So, yeah, that kind of starts the history of it anyway. That's the first time I smoked weed.
Nice.
Then the history of smoking weed all through high school, selling weed, then growing weed. That was my first grow.
So you've been growing since the early 80s?
87.
So can you walk us through your progression in growing, kind of as the industry ramped up, right? I remember John Greenbody was talking to us about when fucking carbon filters came into the scene.
Yeah,
bro. Shit like that, like,
that's
you remember it, right?
Yeah, I do.
Which is a really good point.
You don't have to stress now. Like, what were some big advances and kind of, like, quantum leaps that you saw within the growing community throughout the years?
Well, that's a good one, I mean, for that sure. The carbon filter one was a really big game changer. So prior to the carbon filters, we were using the UV bulbs that created ozone.
Okay.
Yeah, that's too.
So
you come full circle, right?
Yeah. You would pump your, you know, air, but it worked, but not.
Wasn't effective. We didn't really know we were doing.
Kind of massive, right?
It kind of massive. It kind of just twisted that over into like wet mixed with, like, we all started growing in a basement. I grew in a basement bedroom, then it became a full basement, then it became just grow houses. And then it became warehouses. And I was like, I need more power, you know, like, let's go three-phase.
We got to grow more and faster. Power.
And again, back in those is tough figuring shit out with no internet and being able to talk to people. So it's like, what the fuck is three-phase power? What do you mean? What is that?
Yeah, right.
Let the smoke over the wires a few times, figure it out.
Had some crazy close calls.
Dude, I had a bro wiring up the opposite end of a 1,000-watt valve like doing the lamp cord. Is that breaker off?
Is it hot?
Yeah, the breaker's off. Next thing you know, here's wrong breaker. Sorry. You can't skin $1,000 lamp cord on the ends, but you know, anybody who hasn't done a midnight move, you weren't a black market grower.
Mm-hmm.
Landlord's calling. We'll go over and check that out tomorrow morning.
We have an appraisal. I had one. We have an appraisal. Where you need to sit down. Well, I'm gone out of town for about a week. I had a week left to flower. And I'm like, well, I can just push it up a week. No, no, I need to be over there. This has to go down in the next 36 hours. I said, all right. How about this time tomorrow? And I called the boys and we went and got a U-Haul. We got the wardrobe boxes.
Yeah.
We were literally 7 weeks in the flower. Couldn't just hack it down. Drop them in the wardrobe boxes, army of plants, army of shit. Take everything out, paint. I mean, it was crazy. And she walks in and she's like, what the hell just happened here? Kind of like, yeah, that's how it always is. We just paint it.
Just
look good for you. When the appraisal to go up.
Midnight moves, I've done so many.
Can you, what were some other, you said you kind of started off in buckets. What did that progress to, right?
Oh, through
the system, Sabbath flow.
Yeah.
What were the nutrients? I mean, what did you use back in the day? Was that just like fucking, you're just using tomato shit back in the day?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Tomato recipes, you know.
Miracle-Gro.
Super Thrive. No, that's the grocery store we went to. Yeah, fuck, Super Thrive, love that shit. But anyways, all the different systems, you know, like most growers, we're always looking to level up and get better yield, better this, better that. So we try different shit. You hear about a new thing and you go, oh, I'm going to try that. So I've literally tried them all probably 8 times. I keep circling through the gamut of different styles. Everything from, you know, back then it was called dirt. Sorry, don't get everybody fucking lose their minds. It's living soil, I know. But back then it was just dirt, okay? D-I-R-T. Then... You know, third day in Canada. Of course, rock wool was around. Coca was not a thing. The expanded clay pellets were.
I've been around for so long.
Yeah. Well, back to why I was water-based. So I looked for systems that didn't have to carry a bunch of medium in and out of houses. Right? You're in a black market situation in a basement. You got to bring in and get rid of moving stuff in and out of places, and similar now to even our facility in Canada, our legal licensed producer facility, we don't buy medium, we don't discard medium, and that's operating costs are lower on a monthly basis because we're not purchasing a dump truck full of rock wool going into the landfill.
Makes it a lot easier too, because like here in Vegas, we have to render it useless, even the root balls. So
is that right?
Crazy, man.
Yeah. No shit. See, in Canada, the roots are not considered a cannabis product at all.
I mean, obviously it shouldn't be, but it's just another one of the crazy rags that we have to deal with.
Yeah, it was difficult, obviously, coming from black market stuff. But I'll say this, even in the black market, I was very much opposed to using harsh pesticides because I'm a smoker. I grew my crops, I smoke, I'm going to smoke with a shit. I don't want to smoke Floramite, Nova, Eagle 20, blah, 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 even though I knew tons of growers that use that shit. So I'm grateful, I think, I'm much happier that this point out is clean. You know, like, I think that is smart, because I know, as a black market grower, I knew a lot of colleagues, you know, we all busy each other's grows, and many of my grow colleagues didn't smoke. They were in for the money, straight up, right? So they were spraying Nova.
They
didn't give a fuck.
Right. Man, bro. No box, bigger yield. Looks good enough.
That fucking PGRs and whatever. So, you know, of course, completely handcuffed. The early days of legalization in Canada, literally like nothing. The harshest insecticide you could use would be like a canola oil-based shit. You know?
Okay. Is that one of the reasons kind of that led you to aeroponics? Have that always been kind of like a transition that happened where you're doing that black market? Can you kind of walk us through the story of kind of how you got into aeroponics too?
Because
I mean, not many people do it on the scale you do, right? The success that you have. So
fair, I appreciate that. It was a good, let's say, I guess a good marriage there with our company that when we did get, because I built aeroponic systems in the 90s. I literally built my first aero system, I think probably 94, 95. And I did a 40 lighter. I did some deep water culture systems, of course, too.
Can you walk us through that setup? What was it like?
Yeah,
where did you get the idea? I mean, to go aeroponics. Not many people were doing it fucking 94, right? How many people do you know that was?
None. I don't know. I read
about you a psychopath.
Sure. Yeah. It was, you know, sure. It wasn't the easiest path, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I guess, what it was for me. I remember another basement grill I had. I did a side-by-side. I had my bottom third, and I had a rock wall, and I had a hydro plant. All the same genetic. And I wanted to compare growth rate. Okay. By far, that hydroponic plant outgrew the other ones, you know, by a tremendous rate. So growth rates are really fast.
Well, it's one of the big things that Jimmy's been able to achieve in his commercial grow is he's been able to shave off time.
Yeah, shave off time. So when I look at yields, everybody talks about how many pounds of light did you get or what's your biggest crop. I'm like, well, fuck, there's a ton of other variables. Tell me how long it took you. How long did you veg the plant? Did you veg it for 8 weeks?
Right.
Like, you don't want to, they don't talk about that. No. They just say, well, I crushed it out. I got fucking 1,000 pounds per light or whatever.
Right.
Which, okay, but let's talk cycles per year. Let's talk about a year. Yeah. You know, I think that's the best metric.
Yeah.
So the aeroponic system in the 90s that I built, how did I get into it? I probably read an article somewhere.
Did you run DWC at all? Yeah,
I sure did. You bet. And some warehouses in Toronto and Teal.
Yeah.
So those were interesting. They were like a picture of 4 foot by 4 foot tub, 1 foot deep with a plastic lid on it.
Yeah.
And then 12 plants in that. So one big container instead of individual. So first building those bucket systems, all that hosing, connecting them all. So then instead of just one larger container that would hold 9 or 12 plants, you know, and the root system hangs and that, and had those connected similar to, you know, the current culture guys that are large piping that lets that water flow. So,
sure.
But that holds a tremendous amount of water.
Yeah.
Guess what else happens and grows? Water loves to get out.
Yeah, it finds a way.
Yeah.
You know, one of our top, we're going to talk worst floods.
Oh,
we
gosh.
Get into it, dude. Fuck me.
I'm a flood master.
Flood master X right here. So deep water culture, I'm like, no, that's, we're talking, I don't know, 800 gallons of water in the system in these warehouses or whatever. So move to aeroponics. And no, I need to diminish that water supply and or water volume, rather, in the system. So built these aero systems and used irrigation. Oh, for your yard, you have those zones, manifolds, 12-volt systems for irrigating your yard. I bought those, put them in, and had those click-through zones on a programmer. Okay, zone 1, zone 2, zone 3, and 4. And a reservoir, all drains back to, clicks through the things. You know, of course, learned how to chill the water efficiently. Went through lots of different iterations on that, from electronic chilling to just cold water running through the coil, transferring heat out of it. So aero for quite a while. I probably did that for a long time. And then I moved to British Columbia in 08 and kind of had a lot of difficulties with aero.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of challenges.
There's a lot of challenges.
Especially back in the day.
Back in those days.
You're pioneering.
And of course it was back down, and it comes down to, well, at that point I thought it was water supply. So British Columbia is a lot more, the lakes have a lot of algae, and just like in Calgary, it's glacial water. The river that feeds Calgary is just glacial. So it didn't have all the algae and different pathogens probably present in that water supply. A lot better success there. BC, not as much. And then that's when I started messing around with ozone and other forms of sanitant. But then Coco showed up, you know, and I'm like, hey, you know, this is what everybody, of course, the ProMix days. Do you guys have ProMix?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. ProMix, huge. Ton of ProMix, Sunshine Mix, a little different
mixes. Different combinations,
yeah. Sure. And then Coco, but, you know, this facility we're in now, I started with them, they'd already gone down the path of aeroponics. So they were probably at MJ Biz. And they saw a really nice display. In fact, you guys were set up next to them this year. Essence.
Yeah.
Right? You guys were right next to them in MJ. Mm-hmm.
Past couple years.
Yeah. So they had it's nice looking shit, man. It's really, really well built, et cetera, et cetera. So the company, and that's a whole other story, is how I even started with them. I was not looking for a job. They kind of found me out of that side of things. Just how life coincidences work. You end up on a flight with somebody, you talk to one person, and then next thing you know, they're like, hey, do you want to come look at our facility? I'm like, no, we're looking for a job, but sure. I'll come check it out. I said, well, I hope you guys know what you're doing. You're doing aero. Good for you. Ballsy.
What scale was it at when they told you?
Like 800 lights.
Okay.
800 tubs, 800 lights, big.
Yeah.
And they want to double deck it all. Like, so I'm like, you guys have done it, right? You know what you're doing?
Double decking your apartment.
I remember Jimmy calling me. He's like, Jerry, listen to what's going on up here.
So,
well, if anybody can do it, it's you.
Yeah, well, so that's just it. I'm tenacious. I love a good problem to wrap my head around.
Did you double deck it?
We have.
Okay.
No, hang on. We have two rooms. We have two rooms of double deck and six rooms single tier.
Okay.
So my six single tier rooms, it's all aero, first of all. Let's just cover that. The whole facility is aero and medium. We have six single tier rooms with our A3Is. So I love those rooms because I can grow my taller plants. I get my sativa dominance in there. Those lights, I set them, forget them. I hate raising and lowering.
Those lights are hanging on the ceiling in those rooms, right?
They're hanging just below the ceiling, about 16, 18 inches or so.
Okay.
And they're fixed. We don't mess with them. I dim to get
sure
what I want to or increase power what I want to.
You guys end up, what, like 4 feet off canopy at final?
Oh, yeah.
Roughly?
Yeah, roughly. Roughly, depending on, you know, my cultivar, if I flipped it a little later,
what happened? Sure.
What happens? But that was the target. We're targeting and we're averaging in the area of 1,200 to 1,400 ppfd at canopy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is kind of related, but a little bit off topic. The nutrients you use for aeroponics. A lot of the feed charts and a lot of the guidance that you can do now is directed towards rockwool or cocoa.
Sure it is.
It's you probably have to figure out a lot to figure out what to feed, how to feed, mm-hmm. what lines work, what lines don't within a system. Can you kind of walk us through what you developed kind of to figure out all of those nuances
sure.
for feeding in aeroponics? Because I think it's a kind of a cool box. I mean, it's crazy to hear about different methodologies within that.
So you're right. I mean, all the information out there is completely geared at medium-based.
Yep.
Dry downs, flushing, you see the for rock wall.
How are you crop steering an aeroponic? Crop steering.
Little mist, big mist.
Give
it a little squirt. I mean, there's a lot of dialing into it.
There is a lot of dialing.
The size of the micron of the...
Micron of the water droplet. But then again, that's just, we have a combination in a facility. We have high-pressure aeroponics and we have low-pressure aeroponics.
Okay.
Essence builds a low pressure aeroponic system. That's a 6 psi generally.
Okay. What's the range for low?
The low would be anything probably under 10, 20 psi,
okay.
30 psi. It's starting to climb into high pressure, but I don't consider that high pressure. High pressure is 100 plus.
Okay.
So in our high pressure systems, we're pumping out 150, 170 psi.
Crazy.
Yeah. And that's for my aerocloning and vegging stage.
Okay.
Then they move out. So what that does is help develop a much nicer root mass off the get-go, and trichoblasts. So trichoblasts are the buds on the roots, you know, the hairs?
Yeah.
Right? Those are those little fine fuzzy pieces off the taproot. That's okay. called a trichoblast. Those are 20 times more efficient at absorbing nutrients or water than a main taproot.
Okay.
So with high pressure aeroponics at 170 PSI, we're trying to achieve about around a 50 micron or 80 micron water droplet. If it gets too small, then it won't carry nutrients. Okay, so if you're getting down into fog, for example, like fog ponics.
So that's that balance you're going to achieve, right?
Yeah.
You have to carry nutrients, but not small enough to where it can't carry nutrients, right?
Right. So, I mean, like, with most root zones, I mean, they don't like being drowned. They like oxygen.
Yep.
Roots want oxygen in any medium. Yep. That's why rock goes quite well. Cocoa works
sure.
So, porosity. So, you know, even in the mixes. But I think one of the biggest things is how fast can you dry it down and so you can get another feed in, right?
Yeah, depending on what stage of growth you're in, what
sure.
kind of cues you're trying to say, size of the plant.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have different irrigation times, let's say, for veg, for flower, for aeroponics, or sort of
way different,
how do you steer within that?
Yeah, well, it's same. It's irrigation frequencies and duration. So I can program. So we write a full grow plan. So back to the essence stuff real quick, because they have a software called the GGM, Grow Garden Manager, that runs. I mean, it runs the system.
Okay.
So I write a grow plan from day one to day 63, for example, right? A flower only one. And I tell it each day or each week or whatever segment that length I want. I can say, this is a 4-day segment. This tab is an 8-day segment. This one's a 12-day. And I can change everything within it. everything from EC, pH, water temperature, humidity, I mean, every parameter.
Okay.
And then that sends the signals to our HVAC system or whatever. So, frankly, I could be on the beach, you know, in the Philippines, running the grill, except for the de-leafing part.
Do you have different plans for different cultivars?
100%. 100%. Nice. Yeah. We have some standard ones, of course, you start out with. And it is really interesting that cultivars respond differently in different grow systems.
Okay.
Some work better in coco.
Yeah.
I have a cultivar that works better in coco and narrow, and I have some that work better.
It's anyone's been everything, right? Like, people want to know exactly what their plants are going to do from HVS Sally D, right? You got to, it's almost
you can't
like
just pick one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like refeeding on to new genetics, right?
Oh, I love it.
Some might look exactly the same. Yep. Some might look completely different. Some might work in this new system, and some might fall off, right?
I love the question. People always think there's just one, or not a lot of people, but they think there's one answer. How did you do?
Yeah.
Not, you know,
or there's just there's one driver, right?
Yeah.
Like, so many variables.
It's not a silver bullet. No.
Yep.
It's like, you know, what are you feeding your plants? What's nutrient? Your salts, bro.
Absolutely.
It's a challenge to balance between everything, though, right?
But let's be okay. So back to that original question, we blend our own salts.
Okay.
We buy really high quality, high solubility, high purity salts, and we blend our own nutrient recipes because we don't want any dyes in our newts.
So
also, I don't believe in shipping water across the country. So.
Absolutely true.
But that being said, so there's a lot of great brands and newts out there too that ship you dry salts or pre-mix, like an egg, I'm putting your mixer. So we have a nice big paddle mixer and our own mixing table. We'll mix our salts for days. We do a lot of leaf tissue analysis, of course, and tweak recipes based on those results. But no dye, so nothing organic. In an aeroponic system, in a recirculating water-based system, zero organics. So no humic, no biologicals. Like, it's just a sanitized system is how it's got to work. Biofilm is a real nasty situation.
Yeah, have you experimented with different things that just kind of went catastrophic?
What were the
aeroponic fuck-ups, if you will? So I'm sure within a system like that, it's like, fuck. You get this idea one day, and you throw it in, and you're just like, oh, fuck.
They didn't just throw it into the facility. Jimmy ran it, you know, trial.
Yeah.
Separate.
True.
I know. I'm not talking about facility, but back in the day.
Yeah, for sure.
What were some of those learning experiences, too?
Fuck. I mean, like, learning, microbial peas. Let's go. Let's brew up some, you know, voodoo juice and throw it in and all that shit. And you brew it, and you make a nice microbial tea, and the roots are going to love this.
Yeah.
You know, it fucks your system. It breathes slime on it.
It can bubble, too.
That shit bubbled and slime on the side. So it colonizes, so it's good to inoculate your roots, perhaps, with this for a quick, but not just put in your system and leave it, and which is what I did.
Yeah.
Okay, microbial tea is great.
Yeah.
Beautiful as shit.
I think we all.
Get the seaweed in there and the food, and then brew up your teas and throw it in, and mixing in, your whole system's just slimy mess.
So I read this one.
Fish pond.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that term, fish pond. It's really one of my key things to determining the health of my system is my nose.
Yeah.
I can smell instantly that if you've ever had an aquarium, then you know. You clean an aquarium, that fishy bacteria smell, whatever. If it's going to smell like a pond, I want my system to smell just like nothing. Clean, 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 right? Roots clean. So bacteria breeds really fast in a recirculating water-based system. I mean, my analogy that I tell people usually is a swimming pool or a hot tub. Imagine having a hot tub at home with no chlorine or bromine in it.
Yeah.
By the next morning after you've hot tubbed, it's a petri dish.
Yeah.
Right? Water temperatures are crucial, of course, too. For your benefits here in the States, we'll call that 68 Fahrenheit or 18.3 Celsius. But warm water breeds microbes faster.
Yeah.
But then again, too cold of a water, the plants aren't really liking that. You know that we need a nice medium, but we're compromising that for Pythium is our number one enemy.
Okay.
Number one enemy in an aeroponic or any water-based system is Pythium, which is brown, bushy roots, root rot.
Yeah. Can you walk us through kind of process procedures you do to avoid things like that and even touch on a little bit about IPM within a system like that because it's different than everything else. Media-based.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, I do love here's the one real pro, of course. I mean, there's many pros to it, but insect wise, we are clean. Like, we just hardly ever get insects. But a little bit in the summertime, maybe we got to take care of it. But thankfully, winter freezes the shit out of everything and it dies outside. But IPM management in the root zone is different than the plant zone. So we'll separate that topic right now into the root zone, which is, you know, any pathogen that it can be waterborne and recirculate, especially Pythium. I think Botrytis, I'm pretty sure HLV can be waterborne as well. We, you know, that's not our concern right now, but it's interesting that fucking we discovered a brand new one. Remember that article in MJ Biz, that black root rot shit?
Was that you?
It just looks like a snot, like dude, Godzilla black snot.
Brucniomyces rooksae. What the fuck was that stuff again? It's a sporulating fungus.
Okay.
It sporulated everywhere, bro. It was sporulating fucking...
Walk us through that.
It grew pretty fast, right?
So you discovered it within cannabis, or you discovered
cannabis, it? No, okay. Discovered it on the world.
Okay.
Like, it was... We sent this shit...
No one knew what this was.
We sent it to the fucking nature. Six labs, and they're like, don't know.
No shit.
Don't know. We can't identify it. Okay. What do you got there? So we sent it to a university, and... this guy, a PhD candidate, genome sequenced it, you know, with the DNA, blah, blah, and yeah, dude. So it's never been, you guys want to name it? I'm like, fucking right, I do. I'm calling it Aerobastardia.
No, did you?
We try and name it. I'm like, fuck that shit, it's ruined. I mean, it's overnight. So talking about these explosive situations, we've kind of seen some on the roots. I inspect the roots a lot. It's, you know, a real important situation in there because take care of the roots, they'll take care of the plant. So IPM scouting occurs peeking under the dome.
Yeah.
Lift the lid.
With your nose, roots. Too, right?
Yeah, with your nose. Just telling you that smell. Nope.
Okay.
No, so that's not a smell. Smellless. Here's the other thing. That shit thrives the colder the water gets. Too. The colder the water, the better it does. So it's actually like
so different.
Different. So I was trying the things that I would normally do for a pathogen invasion in my root zone.
Yes.
Cool the water even further.
Okay.
Make it colder. Higher oxygen content. Yeah. Over the water. Blah blah blah. You can hold more dissolved oxygen in colder
just
water.
Took off.
Shit exploded, dude. Like, man. The next day it was covering the reservoirs. It was on the whole.
I remember the picture you sent. I was like, what the hell is
I
this?
I thought I melted a fucking rubber pump or something. I'm like, what's up? Is this rubber?
It's gross.
Thick. It was gross.
Yeah, so how do you fight something that's completely new, right? So
well, I mean, I would have needed a fungicide, but we can't use any.
Okay.
So in Health Canada, zero armaments to deal with shit like that.
Okay.
So at that point, it was just cull. Thankfully, this was back in the early days of our facility, and I think it was early 2020 or 2019 or something. Before our new expansion happened. So this was a small room, about this size.
Okay.
A small grow room for R&D purposes, for what's required in Canada is to grow two crops and pass them both, submit the samples. You pass both, then you get your license to sell.
Okay.
So we had a cultivation license, got that. Okay, go ahead, grow a crop, send us sample, destroy the whole crop. So you're not going to grow. Yeah, destroy it. You can't extract it, you can't do nothing with it. So. You know, you're just going to grow it.
You can't even make it for the second crop, you know, until you pass. And then
grow it, send us a sample, pass, destroy that crop. Grow another one. Show us you can do it twice and pass. Microbials, heavy metals, pesticides, which
normal.
Very good. We're very good at. Which is one of our brags is, of course, pesticides. No, nobody can fuck
around
with that. Our facility is
spotless. From the second, you guys have so many different layers of... you know, IPM, I mean, it's just prevention.
Prevention, keep it clean. Arrow, you know, just keep that shit clean.
Sanitizer for your phone.
The room clean, phone sanitizing, UV things. And but we're proud of our microbials. So that's one thing that people can't, I don't know if you have it here in the States, when you send to the lab, is it micro? I don't
even see that. Yeah, each state has different limits, like,
Yeast and mold.
Yeah, 10,000.
So that's a high number.
Well, I think there's some states that are 100,000. I think there's some states that don't test. There's some states that separate aspergillus outside that count.
That's right.
Aspergillus outside here is separated.
Is it?
So we're looking at one of the strictest. Mass is pretty strict out here.
So we have some COAs which I'm probably going to provide to you guys. I think we can download them, I'm sure, off
Flash
of the but I'll show Flash them to you. Our COAs are fucking great. Microbials lower than detectable limits off, like most 9 times out of 10.
Yeah,
so the allowable limits are up to 5,000 CFU. Our COAs come in lower LOD, under 10.
That's great.
10. Did you increase that type of, let's say, security for your facility after that incident happened? Did you just go in full fucking, like as clean as possible?
You know what I did? Never bring a clone in again.
Okay. Is that where you think that came from?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, everything's from TC. Everything.
All of our stuff now is TC. And so in our early days back in, again, that inception of our facility, Health Canada was getting their ass handed to them by the black market. They were trying to diminish its success. And they realized that when they first started up, they were like, all these legal grows, you all have to grow these genetics. Here, we got some for you. All these bullshit fucking... And they're trying to sell these seeds or genetics, and like everybody's growing the same 15 strains. So then they were like, fuck, the black market's still just crushing us. So guess what they did? They said, okay, we're going to let you have a one-time exemption
to bring shit in.
To bring shit in. Okay. So a facility like ours,
we got our rush for everyone.
Dude, so that's when I...
Jimmy brought in a shitload. I mean,
I came to see you. I banked up on some seeds.
Yeah,
you probably got some Jerry's clone.
No, not clones. I got some seeds. I probably did. You did a
bullshit. All of it can be carried via seed, obviously. It's and this has really started to take a lot.
It's pretty wild.
Look, even three years ago, the movement of tissue culture was like this.
No,
right? Like this maybe, and everything obviously because it's a necessity for we need it for our success. Start with clean.
So that one time exemption, I went on a rampage before. I already had a lot of collection from my days. And with my last name being Strain, it was kind of incumbent upon me to collect strains. I said, I was like probably 100 in my possession, roughly 50 or 60 in actual mother plant form that I maintained in the mother room, resetting all the time, pain in the ass. Then another 150 different genetics across seeds, across 1,200 seeds.
So after that.
So brought that all into the facility, and I'm screaming up, we got a tissue culture this all before it comes in, and then the company's like, holy fuck, that's a big tab. They're charging $5,000 per genetic to take
TC. And it's going to take, what, fucking 6 months?
Did that, got slapped on the hand for our error. Thankfully, it was, again, in this small little error. We called the crop, took that equipment out. Once we learned what it was, I mean, this shit was a bastard of a breeder. Like, fucking, it could be disastrous. Anyway, took out a few pumps, some lines that we didn't want to clean, didn't deal with. We could fungicide the rest of the equipment and put it back into service. But certain things you wouldn't want to risk. Your irrigation lines.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it out, sprayers. Even a pump, even though there are those Eco Plus 250s, you've opened them up before, right? Well, the only way to clean it is brushes. You gotta clean. There's no just running a chemical through your system and going, and reloading it. You'll get your ass handed to you. We melted some of our spray tips with the green clean for sure. We left it in too long. And the next day, let the lid on the green spray just fall right out. Oops. A lot of trial and error. So it's kind of a nice segue into what we do now, which is, I won't go into detail about it, but we have a very, very clever, fancy ozonation system. So we use ozone.
Okay.
So within all the paths of what can we use in Canada, which is nothing, virtually. but ozone is O3, and it turns into O2 when it's done, when that oxidizes. The third atom of oxygen detaches, oxidizes whatever, and it's an incredibly powerful oxidant, right? It kills viruses, pathogens, anything. It obviously sure. harmful to people as well if it's in the, I mean, even levels that under 1 ppm are pretty noticeable in the environment. So it was a challenge to figure out how to impart ozone into our water system without it going into the atmosphere. So what I wanted was aqueous ozone and not atmospheric ozone. So
aqueous just means in,
like, dissolved. Yeah, aqueous in dissolved. In. So just like, you know, dissolved oxygen content.
I mean, you guys keep really close eye on your ORP mm-hmm. system as well.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly, ORP is oxidative reduction potential of the solution. And
Jerry and Brugetics can't say that.
ORP, oxidative reduction potential of the solution. Obviously, if you throw in like a drops of chlorine or other things, that increase that level. But generally speaking, the plant roots don't like any of that.
Yeah.
They don't want chlorine. They don't want some of these powerful oxidative things. So ozone was something that took about a year and a half for us to go through again. Nobody had done it. Nobody, there was no, here's the internet, here you go.
Yeah. Build this. So are you building a system with another company, within yourselves?
I did it. We did it. Yes. Yeah. Completely. Just a lot of sleepless nights. I sit in my hot tub, smoke a lot of weed, and like, how, fuck. I'm going to do this, you know? That's it. And then trial and error. And of course, my background as a black market grower, gave me all those skill sets to tinker. I can build shit.
Yeah.
I can problem solve it because they had to. So that allowed us to bring this in and figure out how to aqueous ozone, not atmospheric ozone, because it'll fuck up your plants. Bad. It'll burn. Have you ever had one of those ozone systems gone wrong when you were fed back in your room? It'll burn your leaves like enough.
Just becomes toxic at some point.
Yeah, it's pretty harmful. So also we have to deal with, you know, our work safe regulations in the province. And we also use a product out of California called Clearline, which is hypochlorous acid. Hypochlorous acid is another good sanitant. It works well. It's not harmful to the plants. I mean, a nice collaborative company like yourself. So, Fos, Essence, they're called Current Culture out of California. They build the deep water culture systems, and they have a product called Clearline, or a weaker product called UC Roots. Mm-hmm. UC Roots. And it is, obviously, it's really another word for it is ECA water, or electrically, chemically activated water. So you can make it at home even with water, salt, and vinegar, and electrolysis. And that's...
Get on that mic.
Yeah.
Burn some up right now.
Burn some up. You can disinfect things with it.
Yeah.
At home. Wash your fruits and veggies. But actually, your body produces hypochlorous acid, white blood cells. So it is another tool in our toolbox. But really, the implementation of it all is the other thing. It's one thing to know about it, but it's another thing to know how and when to use it.
Yeah.
Because ozone also reacts with and knocks out iron and manganese and sort of drop right out of your nutrient solution. You coat it with iron in the bottom.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you got a tub of water, you're circulating, and you got your newts in there. First of all, if you mix nutrients with, you know, that have dyes, okay, like many of the, I won't name names here, but, you know, they get the pink, the green,
got
a little dye, a little, and whatever. So
liquid base is a color, mostly.
Yeah, but they dye. So anyways, the ozone knocks that out. It also completely eliminate all the iron that's dissolved in oxidizing manganese. And
maybe the silica doesn't have color, right?
Yeah.
So you run it by itself.
The ozone? Well, no. Well, again, back to the tweaking the formulas. I won't give away all my secret sauces, but we can tailor a recipe that doesn't have those items in. And then when we do ozonation events, we don't use those, obviously.
Gotcha.
And then we impart back in. But you're not running ozone 24/7.
Well, you don't have to add dissolved oxygen either, because it's a byproduct of the whole process.
It does increase our DO,
which is cool, right?
Which is cool. So after an ozonation period, it degrades, and it does. That's actually the first thing you see rising on your Hanometer is the DO when you start it. But now that you're on the topic, we actually do that
as well.
We oxygen, we fire up our DO. So on a normal system, let's say, a pond, shitty pond, is probably 3 or 4 ppm of DO.
Okay.
The highest you can get is 10, naturally. So right. Let's say under a waterfall, that's a river,
really,
you know,
oxygenated.
That's really oxygenated naturally. Naturally. So, you know, 100% saturation. Now, there's such a thing called supersaturation, where you can actually really drive nanobubbles, the Moliere guys.
The water systems, disinfection and stuff like that.
Driving up DO?
Like supersaturation.
Oh, supersaturation, yeah. But of course, it doesn't last long. Like, it wants to return to equilibrium. So, supersaturation. Yeah, obviously, that's right. If you're moving a lot and it wants to come back out too. So water standing will probably settle in around 3 or 4 ppm. Water moving, waterfall, river. So exactly that. If you're out in the forest and you have to drink some water, go find a waterfall, not a pond, right?
Yeah.
So of course, what does DO do? It helps the health of the system, the anaerobic bacteria versus aerobic bacteria, right? So DO is important for us, for sure. We track it. We want to increase that as much as possible. There's just a ton of nuances to it, for sure. It's a niche, but what I'm really happy with is the aeroponics being one of the faster ways to grow a plant, coupling that up with the FOS A3i. So when I looked at this, is when I came on board the company, I'm like, shit, you guys are really sending it here. I hope, you know, what are we going to do? Let's fucking rock it. Well, you need to raise all the levers at once. You can't, like, you as a grower also know this, you're not just going to increase light to 2,000 ppfa and leave your CO2 at 400 ppm.
Yeah.
So exactly, we raise all levers. But again, when I saw our system, which kind of my analogy was what I've told people often, it's a Ferrari system. You know, it's, we need a Ferrari mechanic, we need a Ferrari driver. You know, yeah. This isn't the low and slow method. This is higher risk, higher reward.
100%.
Right?
And when you push those parameters, the risk is high.
Absolutely.
People have to understand
1,000%.
That. 1,000%. You miss that irrigation, you do something like that, like, bro, running way lower, you might be fine.
Right? I was down there last Christmas morning, wake up, fuck.
Yeah.
Alert.
You're going,
oh, right? Son of a bitch. Roll four offline, you know, roll four down. Mm-hmm. Ah, whatever, coffee Bailey's a joint. Here we go. Get my Santa hat on and down to the facility.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Yeah.
Now, had I been in soil and maybe I just could dim the lights by it from home and I'll
let it ride.
It'll be fine. I'll let it ride. The pump's done. It'll be fine. You know, forgiving. This is not one of those systems.
This is not that. It's 100% anxiety. All the fast
reaction out of the plant.
For sure.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I live minutes away from work.
Right. Reward that comes from it is just that much greater.
The word that comes out of it, and it's such a competitive market, dude. I mean, we're not shooting for the middle. Well, we don't want to compete in the band from 20 to 80. We want to be competing in the 90 to 100.
Yes.
So terpenes, taste, flavor, forward growing. I wish I could have brought you guys some Rainbow Flame to smoke.
Oh my gosh.
Fuck me, that's good. Good stuff, but of course, U.S. federally illegal, so I couldn't.
You don't want to get banned for 10 years?
So I couldn't.
Shout out to.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to get banned for 10 years. I love coming here. I love seeing my homies. I love coming down to the States. So, no, it wasn't worth the risk. So I brought some empty packages. But the Rainbow Flame, our Mac 1, I'm not a fan of the THC race. I could give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, we never, back in the black market, didn't have those numbers. You know, good pack was a good pack.
Terps.
Terps, baby. Smoke. Look at it. The smoke clean. So clean burning is one of my main parameters. And that's why Aero is great. Because as much as I can input salts, tweak formulas instantly, like literally from here, I could grab my laptop and I could increase nitrate to row 3 if I need to. Alone. Just on jug, you know, just tell it to dose more.
That's an insane amount of control.
Insane amount of control.
It is.
You know, coupling out again with your lighting. So let's just go rehash here. In our facility, we have F1Vs. I have 600 watt F1Vs. I have 404 A3Is.
Okay.
Right. And I'm going to give you guys a real big respect for this one here. So when I bought my F1Vs, They get them in the facility, and I'm cloning and badging with them. So we have a one-touch system. When I take a clone off, it goes into my aero cloner, and it's big, double-deck, double-tier aero cloning. So it's one-touch, roots and badges in place. Then it comes out of that with roots this long into the production room, flip the flower. So the F1Vs, when we got them, what was their shutoff, Jared? 31%, right?
Yeah.
31? Mm-hmm. You guys have them off. And of course, they're too powerful at that percentage for cloning, by far. All right. So I'm like, fuck, Jared, what are we, tell me.
Yeah.
Clones are welding, man. I need to dim these fuckers down. Dim them down. Alex, God bless him. Well, shit, okay. I can get you down to 11%, I think. So he modified some controllers for me, help with solution. Modified some of your post controllers. We patched those in. He modified them, shipped them up, boom, had them in a couple days. We put those into our loop, into our system, in, kind of in between our BMS system. Now we're F1Vs at 11%.
Nice. Can you?
Always good to hear.
Yeah.
It's cool to kind of understand how people are utilizing the spectrum changes in the A3i. Can you walk us through just your kind of spectrum changes, what you do, intensities from like bench to flower? How do you ramp into those higher light levels?
How many weeks are you running spring, summer, autumn even?
Cultivar dependent for sure, as all every one of these answers usually is. Mm-hmm. But as a general rule of thumb, the A3Is, without a doubt, I utilize the different spectrum changes, and I'm, you know, playing with some different stuff. Like, for example, in the last week of flower, I might go back to spring. Let's see.
Do that guy, yeah.
You know, just fucking off this thing.
But
generally speaking, no. I'm most of the time in summer.
Okay.
Most of the time. Keeping in mind that in my veg cloner rooms, they're under your already your spring spectrum on the F1Vs, correct?
It's similar.
It's yes. A white. It's just it's a nice white.
Yeah, higher white.
Is it a higher? Okay. Yeah. So coming out of there, they've done that. Then I'll leave them on spring, not for very long, because the summer has more red through it, and red photons carry more energy than blue. So we have probably 80% of the time in summer. Okay. But the dimming is something I use a lot. Then, of course, the last few weeks I'll go to fall mode.
Okay. Do you try to hit with that 1200 to 1500 right away in flower? Some people try to acclimate them. Some people will hit them right away.
No, we're gonna ramp.
Okay,
ramp.
So how long do you usually ramp to those light levels for?
I'm ramping daily, 5% maybe.
Okay, so just slightly.
During my lesson, don't fucking ramp 50% on the Patreon.
Please don't. We had Ewan hang on, and he said from research that they've done 150 micromole. Adjustment is pretty much, I think, where you want to stay around. Don't quote me exactly on that. I think it was around those levels.
Something like that.
It's a good increase. So, on our remote,
it was just a photon blast all at once.
Yeah, I would do 2 to 3% a day because it gives you time to kind of see the plant, see what's happening. Is it stressing? Do I need to adjust the parameters? Yep. Is it where I want to be?
But again, with the arrow, what I like is the coupling of those two things allows it to happen quicker because transpiration and uptake is easy in aeroponics. Right, the root zone systems, again, we'll show you some images. I know you have them. But they're just right there waiting to uptake.
So do you just ramp your nutrient concentration kind of in tandem with your increases in light then?
Yeah, a ramp up on all of those things, even CO2. So every time I'm ramping light, I'm ramping CO2.
So a lot of people, I always say kind of match your light levels around. People ask for a good guide, should it be like 1,000 or 1,500? I match my CO2 to my light levels.
Hmm.
If I'm at 1200 in flower, I'm riding 1200 ppm CO2.
Just because you like the sound of
general rule, it's really funny.
That's true. It's fairly easy, right?
I mean, where do you hit as far as CO2?
We're getting up to 18.
18. Okay. Juice.
Yeah. Nice. 1800.
And when you have that much control over every other system like you do, you can push, right?
So I mean, I've done experiments. I've tried 4000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, it's saturated.
Wait, I remember 30 seconds and fuck.
Gotta
run it out of this room.
No, no.
Yeah, quick break.
Yep.
Pissed. Pissed call.
Okay. Let's rate him at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
I want to hear that too.
Sorry, I just fucked up your flow.
No, I'm sorry.
Hey guys, thanks a lot for joining me today in the podcast. Season 1, episode 1 of Dare Strange.
I'm sorry,
learning experience. Maybe tomorrow morning we'll come back and get you sober like myself and you guys will see.
Was that you ending the podcast?
That's me ending the podcast. Ow. I'm done.
Yeah. We're going to end it with fucking facts. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 1 with Jimmy Strange. Jim, thanks for coming on.
It was my pleasure, man.
I don't really appreciate you.
I really appreciate this.
Thanks, Jimmy. Yeah, tune in for next episode. We're excited to see what happens.
Later.